Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight in studio, our artist and curator, Kat O'Connor. Kat, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And one of the artists in the show we're going to be talking about, Madge Evers, or is that how you pronounce it?
I pronounce it Evers.
And that's the way we pronounce it, Evers, Madge Evers. And we're going to be talking to them about a show that's coming up at the Worcester Center for Crafts called Realism. Six artists. It's going to open March 12th, and it runs to April 25th. Kat, talk to me about this show and the organizing. Was it your idea? Is this the first time you've curated?
It is. It's the first time I've curated a show. Yeah, I was a little nervous.
Okay.
Candace Casey from the Worcester Center for Crafts.
Who's here and not saying anything.
Yes. She had asked me to do a show this coming spring. And I had said, I've had a few shows there. And she said, well, I want you to curate a show rather than have a show of your work. And we talked a little bit about what she wanted. I'm not sure that I've met that, but she did say you can do anything you want, which was terrifying. But I think eventually the show that I came up with, I'm very, very happy with.
Did you have other ideas before you started?
Oh, yeah. I had lots of ideas. Almost all of them were based on artists that I liked. I ended up going with a concept that I liked and then choosing artists that really fit that concept.
Now, realism is an interesting concept, and both in relationship to your own work. But as the point you make in the in one of the art statements about the show, every artwork is altered reality.
Yes.
And I don't think people understand that.
Okay. Yeah, I think artwork is an abstraction in and of itself. I mean, you're taking a view of something, an image, a memory, and you're creating something from that. You can show 10 artists one thing, and they'll all come up with a different interpretation of that thing. And I'm always curious about what defines realism versus what defines abstraction. So this show basically presents that question, how you define realism in art, and then gives you a number of examples of artists who do them in maybe very unexpected ways.
There's a phrase that is in one of your statements about this, that process and source becomes the realistic element in the works of these artists. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So we have Madge's work, which is basically prints done from mushroom spores. And she has a little bit of control over what they do, but things happen. The wind blows, the spores around, whether they're beetles or worms fall out of the fungi and make tracks that look to me like lines, like an artist's line in a drawing or a painting. And I love the fact that she starts with that actual thing and comes up with an abstraction based on it.
So the reality in Madge's work is the object itself, the fact that the spores will drop out of a cap of a mushroom when you put them on a piece of paper. But then what happens after that is totally either randomized, but first of all, she's arranging them.
Yes.
So that's the artistic element in it. And she's choosing works and then throwing away other works that you don't find as interesting.
Right.
So the process becomes the realistic element in this.
Yes. And then we have Rye Anderson, who lives in Mexico.
She's got an amazing resume.
She really does. I actually found her work for the first time 20 years ago, fell in love with it. She has pieces in this show. She's a photographer, but she belongs to an aerial circus troupe. And
I like how you just sort of go slide right over that, like, yeah, like everybody else is.
Right.
That's pretty wild in and of itself.
It is. It is. And it informs her artwork in many ways. And I'm fascinated with that idea. So she's
used perspiration after performing.
Yeah, she uses sweat on a floor. So the dancers do their workout, and then she has them lay on the floor for a few minutes. And then they get up, and she quickly photographs the results, so the sweat on the floor. And what I love about them is that the solid floor ends up becoming space compared to these 2D print images, which catch both light and shadow in some shape. Some of them you can see the figure, some of them you can't. But they end up being these very incredible reversed images.
The fascinating thing is, as you describe that work, and this has just occurred to me, there's a lot of relationship to Madge's work in that same way, as they have an object lying down creating a print.
Yes.
That's really fascinating. Now, Lucy K.H. Collian?
Yes.
Talk about her.
She's an artist from New Jersey, and she draws individual trees very realistically on the paper. She actually attaches the latitude and longitude of the tree location, which fascinates me because she's taken this very realistic image, choosing it first from the forest and then choosing it to block it off in its own reality. So as real as the image is, it's sort of abstracted into something else.
She's essentially cropped it. I mean, yes. she's taken an individual tree, cropped out whatever has been around it and in the background and used that. And that's how she's altered reality.
Yes.
Yeah. But it does. I think people looking at her work are going to go, oh, no, that's totally realistic work. It's not. And that's the point of the show.
Right.
Okay. Roger Palfreman.
Yes. He is a Boston photographer, Boston-based photographer. I know him from Copley Society. I walked into the gallery one day and there was a photograph of his that I thought was a pastel drawing. It was just knockout gorgeous. Very simple, big rectangles of black, gray, and yellow. And I started talking to the gallery person there, and it turns out it's a photograph of the Boston Marathon finish line. He is a marathon runner. And I thought all the history that's tied up in that one color and image and space portrayed in this very painterly way. So I had to include him as well.
What's funny is that he's taken very close images of objects, but he's also taken huge sort of panoramic views, especially of urban landscapes.
Yes. And they end up almost flattening. So he's got a view of Back Bay in Boston.
Right.
And the buildings are just stacked one upon another. It's taken high above from a roof. So you see some of the front of the building, some of the roof of the buildings, and then all of these rectangular windows. So it creates this abstraction of color and shape.
Now, the next one is Christy Rinklin, who has actually been down here, I think, years ago. But I love her work.
Yeah. She's an amazing painter. And I think she's actually the only person using paint in this show, which surprised me when I pick everyone. I thought I'd have more painters, but as it worked out. But her work has this wonderful sense of depth that reminds me of memory. They're little pieces of landscape, pieces of abstraction. Things are broken out. Things are softened to the point that you don't know what they are. And then some things are very specific. One of the paintings that's in the show has part of a rock outcropping that I see on the pike all the time. And she did say it's a cut in the pike. There's a rock cropping of granite or whatever.
Yeah.
And now every time I look at the painting, I can't help but see that part of the pike.
And finally, William Scully.
Yeah, William Scully does photographs of microscopic images of plants, cross sections. And what he does is he creates this very elaborate grid and photographs each tiny section, and then he puts them all together into one large image. So it's essentially a photograph of a microscopic image.
It's interesting here you talk about the work again, because all of the artists seem to be concerned with the natural world in different ways.
Yeah, it ended up that way.
Did you know that going into it?
It was not purposeful. But once I started looking at them, now I'm thinking about, well, wow, Madge's work is going to look so perfect next to Rye's work.
Yeah,
Because they're so different, and yet they're very similar in what they achieve.
This is going to be the big problem for you as the curator, is hanging different people's work in relationship to each other. Did you you obviously considered that as you chose your artist too?
Yeah, I have. I'm usually very specific about, I build a to proportion gallery, and then I place to proportion pieces inside that gallery.
So you're very obsessive.
I'm obsessive. And then it never works out that way. So I decide on something, I get into the gallery.
You're a defeated obsessive.
I am. So this time I didn't do that.
And you take that energy and put it into your work.
Right. So we'll see what happens with the placement.
I'm sure it's going to be great. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. But that's one of the elements. Like when I ever see a show, and especially these ones at the Craft Center, I'm always amazed about when they have these huge shows, about how you hang the show finally. And I know I've talked to you about that. That seems like a nightmare to me. it just really seems like a wow. And then the artists are concerned, and then they start complaining, and you don't want to deal with the artists anymore. I want to talk to Madge Evers.
Yes.
How did you get started on this? Now, did you do other kinds of artwork before you did this?
Yes. I was a photographer back in the day when I was much younger. And I worked in New York as a photographer's assistant. I went to the Maine Photographic Workshop. And then...
Is this before digital?
Yes.
Okay.
And, yeah. And then I...
What were you photographing? When you're on your own with your camera, what
I was
were you
photographing...
looking at?
I think the most interesting thing were my niece and nephew, who were little children, and I would photograph them when they were underwater, and I was on top of the water.
Whoa.
And it was very abstracted images that were resonate with cats.
This is sort of interesting.
Yeah. And I would do portraits of friends and people.
So how did you get led down the fungi lane?
So I stopped doing photography a long time ago. Because I became a high school teacher and I had a family.
What do you teach?
I teach reading and I teach the ELLs, and I am on a personal day today, just saying so that it's...
I have every admiration for high school teachers. I've worked a lot with high school students, and I think people who are doing it day to day really deserve special recognition.
Oh, thank you. They're pretty inspiring and amazing.
They are pretty inspiring and amazing. It's a complicated situation.
Yes, it is, definitely.
So you go back to teaching, and there was this hankering to start creating images again?
Yes. I think that I've always had an impulse to create, and so I began gardening passionately like 15 years ago. And that is how this evolved, because
You didn't garden fungi originally, because that's not where people start.
No, I did not. No, I didn't start there, but I have a pretty shady yard. And so I said, oh, maybe I can grow mushrooms.
You mean possibly illegal or actually shade?
Yes. Okay. Not possibly illegal. Actual shade, big trees. And so I decided I would plant some King Stropharia because it's a pretty easy to grow in the garden.
This is one of those things. I've never done that. So how easy is it? It seems like it's not that easy.
It's not like putting
in regular plants.
No, it's not. And I actually did it years ago and it didn't work. But then when I was very intentional, I built like 4-foot by 10-foot beds.
Okay.
And I layered cardboard and wood chips, and then you mix the mycelium in with it, the medium. And then I just was very cautious about watering it, and they ended up
You're afraid of too much water or
too little water.
Too
I'm not afraid of too much water.
Okay. For people who don't know what mycelium is, it's the things that look like little rootlets, right?
Yeah, like little white hairs almost. Yeah. So and you can buy the medium from many different places.
And so how successful? I mean, how much do you grow in a year?
Well, that first planting was very successful, and it must have been a perfect, climate year for that.
And you're eating these.
And so I don't eat them that much. They make they make better art than they do. They're not as choice edible as chanterelles or oysters.
Okay, yeah, but nothing is as edible as a chanterelle.
That's true.
But you did eat some of them.
Yes, we ate some of them.
But is it one of those things where you were soon up to your armpits? It's like growing zucchini, like you had like mushroom bread, mushroom stew.
Well,
mushroom.
It all comes at once,
Okay,
of course.
So then you got to worry about what you're
doing
with it.
But for me, then I just started making images with them because I made a spore print to identify and make sure that first fruiting wore actual King Stropharia.
Yep.
And that image where I'd made spore prints before, that image was just very compelling. It was photographic, but it also had depth, and then it had this interesting color, and I decided that I would try with nice paper and see what happens, and then so we didn't eat that many of those. I started
for people
imagery.
Who aren't familiar with spore prints, let's talk about the process.
Sure.
Okay, you're dealing with the cap of the mushroom, you're putting it gill down on paper. How long do you have to wait?
It's always different, but 12 hours, 8 hours, sometimes 24 hours. Sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes they dissolve, they deliquesce. Sometimes it makes a big mess. So it just depends.
First of all, deliquesce is a great word.
It is a great word.
And it perfectly describes what happens to those germs.
Yes, they just kind of,
putrescence.
Yeah. And so then I'll move the cap around, and
oh, wow.
I will then when I feel the image is done, I'll take the mushrooms off and I'll fix the image in various ways. Like if it's on white paper with a purpley or dark spores, I'll spray a fixative on it.
And now there's other things that are going on in these prints too, because it takes so long. There are all sorts of tracks and trails of little invertebrates.
Yes.
That are living in the gills, and they're sort of tracking off the paper.
Right, creating a mark.
And they look, it looks amazing. It looks like little lines of like from an ancient scroll or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, and you told me that.
There's fungus beetles that live beetles. Just in fungus.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And so they're just like, they're part of the artwork too. And have you ever gone and taken shrooms from the wild and then done prints with them?
Yes. Yes. So I started doing that 2 years ago when we had a kind of dry period and there were not that many mushrooms in my garden. And so those mushrooms are white-spored mushrooms more often. So the jack-o'-lantern or oyster mushrooms. And so I go into the woods behind my house or wherever I am and look for mushrooms. And so I definitely forage for mushrooms.
Have you ever done anything with some of these big shelf mushrooms that you see on the sides of trees, the big?
So this year I used dryad saddle, which is like a poured mushroom. It's kind of a shelf mushroom, but it does have white spores inside. And so I made spore prints with that this year, and they're much different than the gilled ones. But the big shelf mushrooms, I don't know. I mean, I've taken them in the past and drawn on them, but I haven't.
Well, there's actually one called an artist's. Fungi, artists, where they traditionally people used to use them as a painting surface.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Wow. Now you arrange these beautifully, too.
Thank you.
And so it becomes like a weird photograph that's without a photographic process that's created entirely by the fungi itself and you arranging them.
Yeah.
They're really unique, and they're beautiful.
Thank you.
They're really, really sort of magical.
I often feel I'm just channeling the mushrooms. I know that sounds...
You have to go see Matanga. You really do. Because I think you are. I think you're really... Well, mushrooms have a whole weird association in history. I mean, there's fairy rings and there's the whole weird thing about the giant puffballs and stuff like that. I mean, there's a whole strange thing about shrooms. And they pop up in like overnight.
Right.
They seem to just appear.
Right. And they're the largest organism on Earth.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, they're
and they're huge. I mean, I forget the largest one that they just figured out.
In Oregon, or something. Yeah.
It was
a honey mushroom.
Yep.
Yes. And the size is underneath the
Realize that what you're seeing is the fruiting body of that's what we eat of the mushroom. The actual major part of the mushroom is the mycelium and then the other parts underneath.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There you've also added other plant material. You put in ferns and you've put in dried plants. Is that a recent development?
Yes. I started with the plant material this spring. I was inspired by Emily Dickinson's herbarium and that she made when she was a teenager, and it's lovely. An herbarium is when you take dried plant specimens and you put them in a book and you label them and you use it for scientific study. And so I decided to interpret that my own way, and I picked plants and from my yard or wherever I am and press them. And then I take the pressed plant, I put it on my paper, and then I put the mushrooms on top to create my herbarium.
So the spores are essentially creating the image of the herb.
Yes. It's a silhouette. It's a stencil.
It's a silhouette. Yeah. A stencil. And you work with ferns too and doing that. That tradition of the herbarium is like a lost art. I mean, everybody used to do that back in the 1800s. And it was a wonderful tradition that you would create your own personal keepsake of the plants that you would find.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really amazing. Now, Kat, tell me when the show opens and when it's closed, and are there special events about it?
Yes. The show opens March 12th and it closes April 25th. On March 12th, we'll have the opening reception 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. We're also going to have an artist talk Thursday, April 2nd.
Will that be all the artists?
Not all of them. Most of them. Rye Anderson lives in Mexico, so she won't be there. but I think everyone else is coming, and that's 5:30 to 7 p.m.
And again, it's going to be over by April 25th.
Yes.
And, you know, what are the hours of...
5:30. Oh, the gallery's open 10 to 5.
Gallery's open 10 to 5 what days of the week? Tuesday through Saturday, but not Sunday. Okay. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guests tonight are artist and now curator Kat O'Connor and artist Madge Evers, who does amazing spore art. And they're all part of a show. Kat actually curated the show. And Madge's work is in the show. It's called Realism. It's at the Worcester Center for Crafts, March 12th to April 25th. Madge, I want to talk to you. Are you still developing what you're doing with these things? It seems like you're still discovering the possibilities.
I definitely am still developing. I have some new ideas for imagery for next spring when I find new mushrooms.
What's the best time to go look for mushrooms? The time of the year?
In the spring and in the fall.
Yeah. The summer seems to be the dead zone because it's too hot.
A little dry, a little hot. I mean, sometimes I'll find mushrooms in the summer.
Do you eat wild mushrooms that you pick? So
yes.
You're one of those people that can actually...
Yes, only certain types.
Okay.
I don't just, not everything, but definitely certain
types. I can identify certain kinds like that are obviously edible, like chicken of the woods.
Yep.
And my significant other, Sheila, will not allow me to eat it because she's so certain that I might misidentify it. And you know, chicken of the woods, it's enormous. It's like orange and white, and it's one of these shell funguses.
Yes.
You can't mistake it for anything else.
Yeah. Oyster mushrooms are
pretty easy to
identify. Chanterelles, although there is a false chanterelle, so
which is poisonous.
Yes,
most of them are not deadly poisonous, though. Right. It's only the amanitas that are deadly poisonous,
and
that's just a few. And those are easy to recognize.
Yes.
Yeah, for people who have never eaten wild mushrooms before, I think that's a real treat. Do you forage?
Yes.
You do.
Yeah.
For things other than mushrooms.
Plants.
You do.
Yeah.
What kind of plants do you eat?
Nettle.
Wow. What do you do with that? Are you making a medicine with that? Or
Nettle?
Are you talking about stinging nettles?
Stinging nettles,
oh my
yes.
God. Okay, I've heard about this. And as a person who's had stinging nettle, like against his skin, I cannot believe you people do this.
So I wear
explain yourself.
I wear really thick gloves.
Okay, I would hope so.
In the spring, and I cut off the tops. And I take the tops and I dry them. And then I take the dried tops and I make what's called an herbal infusion.
Yeah.
And I drink it every day. And I have been for like 22 years.
What? It doesn't give you...
Oh, so when you dry it, the prickly things are no more. They, for some reason, they are...
They lose their toxicity.
Yes.
Because that plant is worse than poison ivy.
Yeah, but you know, there is an antidote, the jewelweed. If you rub jewelweed on it, then it doesn't sting anymore.
I've never tried that.
Try it.
Well, if you're
out there.
I was going to say, first of all, I'm not going to purposely go like, let me try this. I'll first rub my hand in stinging nettle, then I'm going to try the jewel. First of all, you better have the jewelweed close by, right?
They often grow.
Yeah, I noticed that
nearby.
Now that you mentioned that.
Yeah.
That's weird because I know where there's a huge patch of stinging nettle in Rutland State Park.
Oh, yeah. I find that exciting.
Her eyes actually lit up, which was like sort of scary to hear that. That's really fascinating that you do that. What does it taste like?
It tastes like green.
Okay. Like plant. it's got that plant.
Yeah,
kind
chlorophyll.
Of,
it's very chlorophyll-y.
What's it good for?
It's good for, it has iron.
Okay.
And it has chlorophyll. It's good for your kidneys.
They say that about everything. But that's amazing. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah,
but I'm going to remember the thing about the cure for stinging nettles.
Yeah.
Are you going to make any artwork out of stinging nettles?
I do have one piece of art where I took the stinging nettle infusion and I mixed it with glue and then put the and did a spore print on top of it. It's very subtle and you can't even tell. It's like slightly green.
But I love the fact that your experiment, it's almost like you're doing alchemy.
Oh, yeah. And I was doing a little alchemy with... making inks this past winter.
You were.
Just because I was curious and I thought, oh, well, you know, what can I do with these beets and this cabbage and this onion skin?
Did it come out?
Yeah, it came out kind of interestingly as a background.
Are the colors fugitive? I think they're pretty fugitive. Right?
Yes,
they are.
Yes. They've definitely
changed.
They're not
as color fast.
Right. I mean, I did put in were you
able to get
Arabic and
deep color that you
I know, I was never able to get deep color.
I love the fact that you're using natural elements and experimenting with that in your work, because that really leads you. You could be doing anything with your work in the years to come. Are you always going to be working with shrooms, though? Have you got a special connection with?
I definitely do have a special connection with the mushrooms. Yeah.
Have you ever examined why?
No, I haven't. But I did listen to Michael Pollan's book, and I'm super curious about that. Okay. That's a whole other thing, you know.
Okay, Kat, I want to talk to you about your work briefly. Okay. Where are you going to be exhibiting next?
I have a piece in the Newport Annual at Newport Art Museum. And then I have a piece coming up at Copley Society in their winter member show.
Are you still working large? And
yeah,
and,
fairly large. Yeah. I'm doing a lot of watercolor right now.
Huh.
And more at that
size?
Work. Pretty large. Not huge. 22-inch square.
That seems like it would be difficult to work large scale with watercolors, is it?
A little bit. It can be. Yeah, watercolor's tricky, but that's also what makes it fun. It does things that you don't necessarily have control over, and I like that.
Wow. Okay, now again, we're talking with artist Kat O'Connor and artist Madge Evers, who does spore art. I'm really fascinated, which is about the show called Realism at the Worcester Center for Crafts. Six artists. Let's list those artists again. There's Madge, there's Lucy Collian, there's Ree Anderson, Roger Palfreman, Christy Rinklin, and William Scully. When you chose these artists, these are all artists that you knew personally?
No. I didn't know any of them.
But you knew their
but
work.
I admired their work, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, obviously, there's so many artists that I couldn't put in the show because the work didn't suit the show.
Right.
And that was really important to me to get the idea across. The idea is more important than what necessarily the visuals.
I'm really looking forward to the show because it visually is fascinating, but also the concepts behind the artwork are really fascinating. Again, we've been talking with Kat O'Connor, curator and artist, Madge Evers, artist who's going to be in the show Realism. You got to see Madge's work. It's beautiful. The show is called Realism. It's at the Worcester Center for Crafts from March 12th to April 25th. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Uncle Mark, and you're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. Good night.
Good night.